Welcome to the Women Living Well After 50 podcast. I'm Sue Long Carrick and I'm passionate about inspiring, motivating, supporting and informing women over 50 to embrace this exciting time of life. Health and wellness in mind, body and spirit are the foundations for living well, but there is so much more to a life well lived. Each week through conversations with my guests, I'll be presenting topics that will help us all to live well and enjoy life. So join me as we discover new ways to become women living well after 50. Are you ready to start living? What are you waiting for? Let's get started. Welcome to another episode of the Women Living Well After 50 podcast. I'm Sue Long Carrick and it's lovely to have you join me. Now, I need to apologize about my voice. I have a little bit of a cold today, but never mind, we are getting on. And the topic today is all about exercising your happiness muscle. Now, why is it that some people seem happier than others? Are they born happy or have they made a practice of it? Evidence is emerging in science of happiness, and it tells us that although genetics account for 50% of our happiness quotient, 40% comes as a result of our personal choices, and 10% of life circumstances accounting for the rest. The best choices can be difficult to make, though, when we're barraged by all the stresses in our day-to-day lives. So how do we take command of our troubling thoughts? We need to exercise our happiness muscle in the gymnasium of the mind. And that's what I'm going to be talking to my guest about today. My guest is transformation specialist, Dr. Dravon James, founder of Everyday Peace and author of Freedom is Your Birthright. So if you're not feeling happy, if your happiness muscle is a little bit sluggish, then this episode is going to be right for you. So let's go and join the conversation and see how we can exercise our happiness muscle. Welcome, Dr. Dravon James, to the Women Living Well After 50 podcast. It's lovely to have you join me today.
Oh, Sue, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, I'm a PT, a personal trainer, so I know about exercising the muscles in our body and the importance of strength training, but you're going to be talking about exercising a different muscle today, and that's our happiness muscle. And I thought that's a great way to approach this topic. So you talk about happiness as being an inside job. And so are we born with it? Is it a personal choice, a bit of both, or can we learn to be happy?
I love that question, Sue. It's a great place to start because a lot of people look at other people who look happy and they say, gosh, she must be born that way. He must be born that way. And only about 50%, the science says only about 50% of our happiness, our outlook on life comes from genetics and how we are born, the family we're born into. And about 10% is from our life experiences, the circumstances that we find ourselves in. So that means that a whopping 40% is left on the table. And I often tell my clients, my coaching clients, what if I could make you 40% richer? Would you be interested? What if I could make you 40% more successful? Would you be interested? And here's what I mean by that is that 40% of our happiness is controlled by us. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so as we increase that happiness muscle, we become more creative, we become more patient, we become out of the box thinkers, and the most amazing results show up in our life. So 40% happier has a big impact on where we can drive our life.
Yes, yes. And, you know, there's that, I think that we can get caught into the comparison trap, especially with social media, where everything is always the perfect side of life. You know, not many people put up when life isn't going so well. So we get this false expectation of what people's lives are like. Can we look and we go, oh, I want to be like that, or why isn't my life like that? And, you know, it can affect our happiness and it can make us, you know, compare ourselves, and comparison just isn't good for our mental well-being, is it?
Right. So to me, that is, and we all do it. We're all guilty of that. But that's sort of the misuse of social media. And we as the user have to consume responsibly, right? And in the right manner. So we're not going to get rid of social media, and we're probably not going to stop using it. I tell people, you know, in small doses, but when you do visit social media, visit for this reason. Say, I'm going on there so I can get some ideas, so I can see some happy stories and some happy endings, so I can get some ideas. Because after all, most of us are turning into social media because the humdrums of our life, or just as an escapism, and we should view it as such. This is entertaining. We really don't want to get on social media for people to put all their problems and make us feel more down. We're getting on there for that boost, for the liveliness of it all. And so engage with it in such a manner as, this is me getting some ideas to put in my dream journal and my hope chest. I would like to add this to my life. Don't get on there thinking, why does he or she have this and I don't? Look at it as a commercial. That's it.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So you've written a book, and I just want to get it right. Freedom is Your Birthright. And I just wondered if we could just talk a little bit about that and how that helps with our happiness.
Oh, I love that too, because it's a little book, Freedom is Your Birthright, under 100 pages. I tell people, you'll read it once and you'll hopefully be addicted to the outcomes, and you'll go back and you'll use it as a manual for life. It's a tiny little pocketbook you can carry with you. And essentially, in a nutshell, what we're talking about is that freedom is not free, but it definitely is your birthright, meaning that we are free to, and we do, give all of the meaning to everything that shows up in our life. It's just a thing until we give it the meaning. And then understanding how to give things meaning. Is there a process? Well, yes, there is. And how not to let our mind just go down any old alleyway that it wants to, bringing back any old alley cat and memories to drag us down, and putting perspective on things that makes us feel worse about ourselves, makes us feel down about society. We don't want to go down that alleyway. Instead, we're going to pick this beautiful hillside way of looking at life, this grassy hill, and we're going to teach ourselves how to look at life as it is happening. No denial and putting our head in the sand. No, we see the things as they're happening, but our perspective is different. What they mean to us is different. And that will change the way we view our world. And what it does is it attracts different energies to us. I know that's a wild concept to think about, but there's a thing I have posted all over my house. Change the way I look at the world, and the things that I look at will change.
That's so true.
So true.
Yeah. And what I love about the fact that your book is under, 100 pages is sometimes we get these books and there's lots of information in there, but we aren't in the right headspace to take it all in. And we might read a couple of chapters and then we go, oh, this is just all too much. Having something short and to the point with some, resources and tools that we can use is, to me, more beneficial than trying to wade through lots of chapters and lots of information. So I'm glad that you pointed out that it is like a little pocket manual that we can carry with us and refer back to time and again. Now, as I said, I'm a personal trainer and a group fitness instructor. And so I know the importance of daily exercise for my body. But I think you also suggest that it's important to have intentional daily exercise routine. And I'm guessing it's for our happiness muscle.
For our happiness. And it's just, and I love that you're a personal trainer, because you really will connect with it is our daily routines. We're looking for one big explosive result. And it's in the daily habits that we get those results. And so once we start doing small little things, small little adjustments, we end up with these huge outcomes in our life that are amazing. But just tweaking things and making it part of our regular practice. And so I do teach that with my clients, is that the first thing in the morning is to have a morning practice, a morning ritual. What do you do first thing in the morning? Well, one thing I suggest that people do is, as soon as their eyes open up, is to go into a gratitude practice, right? And I have something that I've coined the active gratitude. That means that we don't just say what we're grateful for. We have a process. But the number one thing is that we get excited about it as we're, and I say, write it down. So we write down on a little index card on one side, we write down three things that we're grateful for that happened yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. And there is a reason for that, because our mind has a tendency to dwell in the past. And when it dwells in the past, what that sort of brings up for a lot of people is a little sadness, a depression, if you will, the blues. We kind of think, oh, I miss what was, or, oh, what was so terrible, and that's why I'm in this shape today. Either way, we get sad about the past. So we know our mind has a tendency to go to the past. We take command over what it may think about in the past. So we say, oh, you want to dwell in the past? Well, here are three things from yesterday. Let's think on those. So three things to be grateful for. The mind has a past activity. It's satisfied. And then on the flip side of that card, I tell people to write down three things that you're grateful for that have not happened yet. We call that setting our intention for the day, because the mind also likes to dwell in the future. And what that looks like is a lot of anxiety and anxiousness about the unknown, right? It's either in the past and it's sad, or it's in the future and it's anxious. It rarely likes to stay in the present. We know that about our mind. So to make it easy to gravitate to the present, we'll give it some past activity. We give it some future activity. The mind is satisfied. But both of those activities are things that are going to increase our happiness muscle. That's that working on that 40%, really gentle, like first thing in the morning. It takes 2-3 minutes and you're set to go. And here is the thing with that card. You take it with you. You don't just write it and leave it down at home. I take it with me. I post it on my computer at work. And so when I find myself, my energy starting to dip down in the valley, I look at the card and I'll read it, and you'll be surprised what happens, because I wrote it with active gratitude. A smile starts to form on my face. When a smile forms on my face, your whole body can't help it. It starts to lift. Your whole energy starts to lift. So I encourage people to try that, because it really helps. It's a simple practice. It's a simple exercise, but it'll help get you closer to that 40% increase in happiness.
Yes. Well, what I've done recently, because a lot of my mornings start early. They start at 6 a.m. where I'm taking a class or something. So, you know, when I get up, I'm usually rushing around. And so what I decided to do, I find it difficult to get into that habit to write them down. So just recently I thought, you know, I take a lot of photos on my camera over the course of the week. There might be something that has just made me feel good or whatever. So I've been doing a weekly post and writing down the little things that have brought me joy over the week. And I've got the photos that I can look back to and go, oh, that beautiful sunset the other night, or which is absolutely glorious, or, you know, we've just been on a holiday. So you know, things to be grateful for there. So I'm sort of starting with a weekly wrap up and hope that I can get back into the habit of a daily, your suggestion there. But I think that too often we tend to, as you say, think about the bad things rather than thinking about, even if it's a little thing, it will all add up to bring that richness and joy to our lives. And I think that's the other thing. People think that happiness has to be this big, big thing, instead of just taking the moment to appreciate a sunrise or a sunset, or, you know, something that fills you with joy.
Or a deep breath, right? Taking that deep cleansing breath and just taking a moment and say, oh my gosh, that feels good. Right? Because it really does. When you stop and you take a deep breath, like, wow, why don't I do that more often? That felt good. So taking that moment, and I love the idea about, you know, capturing those little things that along the way in your week that have made you happy. We have something called a smile journal that we do it with my clients, where you catch yourself smiling and you jot it down. And at the end of the week, end of the day, you go back and you read through that and you realize, I am happier than what I realized, right? A lot of this is self-awareness too, right? Because it's a smile journey. You catch yourself smiling, and we smile a lot, but we don't focus on that. And this whole process is mindfulness, is rerouting where we put our attention. You see, your life flows where you, in the direction of where you focus. So if we have a tendency, right? The whole, and it's not to put us down, because the whole world is this way. We turn on the news, it's causing us to focus on, you know, traffic jams and bad weather and the failing stock market and all of this stuff. And it's all informative. So there's nothing wrong with that. But the after effect is it sits somewhere in us. And our tendency is to go towards the lesser, happier side of life, the part of life that sort of brings us down, makes us feel heavy, right? So we're reprogramming our mind, if you will, to say no. Immediately, I wake up in this state, and believe me, it's a big difference when you wake up and you don't have this weight on your shoulders and you're like, wow, I feel good. I'm starting off on the right foot. So these practices help us to do that. And I tell you that 40%, it's small gestures, but that 40% increase in your happiness is a game changer. If you are results driven in your life, which I happen to be. Those of us who are that way, I'm looking for results in my life. I'm looking for results in my client's life, right? And I know when we have these practices, that 40% is almost tangible in the outcomes that you get in other areas of your life.
That's really good. So, you know, talking and just recapturing there, we need to have that intentional daily exercise routine, making it a habit. And as you say, a couple of minutes when you wake up and thinking about the three things that you've been grateful for and then what you will be grateful for, I think is a great idea too. So, and that's an easy way to start, isn't it? It's an easy first step.
But
you actually have five ways to flex your happiness muscle. And I wondered if we could just talk through those.
Yeah. So we talk about that staying in the present moment, and I use that active gratitude card to help me stay in the present moment. So that focuses the mind past and future, gives it something to occupy with, and brings it right back to the present moment. And then feed your mind purposefully, right? I remember as a child, my mom used to say, birds of a feather flock together. We probably have always heard that, right? And so if you're noticing that your life is a little less happy than you would like it to be, pay attention to, what are you listening to? What kind of music are you listening to? What's it telling you about life? It may have a groovy beat, but is the message positive? Pay attention to that. Pay attention to the people that you hang out with. What are the conversations like? Are these people who are uplifting you? You know, you have a choice of what music you listen to. You have a choice of who you spend your time with or how much time. Fill yourself up with positive books. Read as much as possible. And I know reading has become a thing of the past for a lot of people. But even if you're going to, if you're going to listen to podcasts, listen to things like this, there are things that are going to lift you up, give you great ideas how to become a better version of you, always accepting the version that you are right now, always looking to improve. So find something to be grateful for. We talked about that with the active gratitude card, but I do want to spend just a moment here and say that I do have this practice that I encourage people to do all day long, and it is the forgiveness. All day long, even with yourself, when you find that, let's go back to active gratitude. So what, you get up in the morning, you're rushing, as you mentioned, you get up early, you have a class to teach, you may forget to take a picture, you may forget to even acknowledge. And then you figure, oh, well, you know what? I'm a loser. I can't keep it up. I can't do this. I'm not consistent. We automatically go into criticizing ourselves. Well, no, we're done with that. Automatically go instantaneously into forgiveness of yourself for everything. You'll find that those little pesky habits that you don't like will start to fall by the wayside once you acknowledge them and you forgive yourself for them. You forgive anybody else for those, for the habits. And then you go right back to gratitude. Oh, I'm so happy I could let that go. Oh, I'm so happy I could let that go. So that's a good practice right there, that forgiveness and gratitude go hand in hand. And then being aware. I call this my shining the light of awareness. I constantly check in with my thoughts. Now, you got to have a practice. It takes a little while to get here. I started off many, many years ago by setting a little timer, and it was, and I would just ask myself throughout the day, Drayvon, how are you feeling? And, you know, I'd be stunned, like, who asked how I was feeling and stopped to want to know. But just that awareness brings you back to the present moment. And you can sort out in your mind if there's anything in there that is nagging at you so that you can go ahead and confront it directly, the light of awareness, instead of letting it stew in the back of your mind, sprout wings and grow all around your soul and your spirit. You stop right there and acknowledge it. And then it may just be like, oh, well, yeah, I can forgive that. I can move past that. Or there's nothing I can do about that. I'm not going to dwell on that. Right. Mm-hmm. But be in that place where you're constantly paying attention to yourself with softness and kindness, not to criticize yourself. So we're not looking for that. And then movement is so important. That in your, you know, you start off by saying you coach people, you help, you're a trainer. So movement of any kind, if you could just wiggle your fingers, if that's all you could do, or twirl your neck, whatever level, just get some energy flowing. Let that energy start to flow. Practice the movement of the lips and putting your face in a smiling a position. Just some movement. If you can dance around to your favorite song or get some movement in the body, that way you can move that stagnant energy along, open up to new experiences, right? You'll be amazed what happens when you move the body. Simply amazing. The slightest amount of movement does make a difference. So those are some of my top five tips that I use with my clients to get us started. We talked about my smile journal. I really hope everybody tries that. You'll be amazed. You're probably a lot happier than you're giving yourself credit for.
Yeah. And I think, you know, talking about moving your body, you know yourself, or I know I do, if I'm feeling a bit stressed and I go for a walk or a run, or I, you know, do some sort of movement, dance, whatever. It's also finding some sort of movement that you enjoy. But if you just get up and move around, it changes the dynamic and you do feel better. Your mind is clearer and you do feel better. The problem doesn't seem quite so bad. And, you know, so I'm a big believer in moving the body and changing the dynamic, and we can get into a rut, and that doesn't help with our happiness either, because we're, you know, doing the same thing day in and day out. In saying that, though, I mean, sometimes we can't be happy all the time. And I suppose, though, by exercising our happiness muscle, that's going to help us go through and you know, cope when times are a little bit more difficult than normal.
Oh, you're absolutely right. There is another phrase that many of us probably have heard, and this used to really scare me as a young woman, but I've come to find that it is absolutely true, that in our lives, we're in one or three positions. We're either in the middle of the storm, coming out of the storm, or heading into the storm. My goodness, that used to weigh on me so heavily. But during all those three phases of life, right, it's our disposition. Right? Because two people can experience the exact same thing. And for one person, it just stunts them. They can't go any further in life. They think this is the thing that just ruined me. And for the other person, it's just as painful. It's just as hard, but they look at it. This is the catalyst of which helped turn my life around. And it's all mindset. So embracing the happier part of your life doesn't mean that things won't happen. They certainly will. But this is a cushion, a nice warm place to land when they do happen. And that comes from within. I tell you, if you're running around looking externally for somebody to always be there, it's nice when they are. That's great. We don't discredit that. But when they're not there, we're still able to be a comfort to ourselves, an encouragement to ourselves. This too shall pass. I will arise from this stronger and better than I was before, better able to give and to understand and to receive. So being able to approach those difficult parts of our life, having our happiness quotient increased by 40% will make the difference in the outcomes and just how you experience the whole situation.
And, you know, when you're feeling happy, you feel good, you feel healthier, and you're a nicer person to be around, that's for sure. But we were talking before about letting go, and that's something that a lot of people struggle with, isn't it? They or it's either letting go, or we have these stories that we've told ourselves or been told to us all through life, and they're the limiting beliefs, and we tend to focus on all of those and the negatives rather than, you know, addressing them and moving forward. You know, I think that's so difficult for a lot of people.
The letting go portion, right? Because remember, our mind loves the past. It loves the past because the mind wants to be sure about outcomes. The past is the past. It has a sure outcome, right? So they know what the mind knows what happens. But what we can do, and what I teach my clients, is that when you get stuck in that rut where you just can't let this painful event go, realize that you are the storyteller of the event. Now, what do we know about the person who tells the story about something that they went through? Well, that makes them the victor because they survived to tell the tell, right? So tell it from that place. It's okay if you can't let go of the story now. It will eventually lose its sting and its bite. Mm. When you retell the story, use the same facts. The facts are the facts. But now tell it from a place of, this is what I survived. This is what, can you believe I went through such a hardship and here I am telling you about it? That takes that victim mentality away from it. It puts you in a power position because truly that is your position. You're a powerful person. You survived that horrible event. You're still here telling me about it. How amazing are you? Accept that position. And when you tell that story, it'll feel different. You'll feel different. Mm. Right? And eventually you won't need that story anymore. It'll still be part of your past and you may still use it to encourage other people, but you won't need the pain of that story to exist. You'll be able to exist without that pain.
I love that. I love the way that you pivot it to think of it as being a victor rather than a victim because you've gone through something. But, you know, it is difficult when you've been told something time and time again to change your mindset. And again, that's coming back to, I suppose, exercising our brain and trying to take time to reflect on things and to, as you say, use all these tools that you've given us today about being present, feeding our mind, gratitude, shining the light, and being aware of when we do have the negative thoughts, because we're human. We're going to have those negative thoughts, aren't we? But they don't have to define us or stay with us. It's up to us to make the decision of whether we want to stay in that moment or try to pivot out of it and look at it at a different, more positive way.
Absolutely. And ask yourself really gently and kindly, not sarcastic or snarky, do I like the way I feel right now? Does this feel good? How could I feel better? I'll go immediately into forgiving myself for letting that thought drag me down. My goodness gracious, I have no power over that right now. What else could I think about? What else could I think of? Very gently, very kindly. You know, if you've ever had to reroute a middle schooler, I tell you, you know, we've probably all had some interaction with middle schoolers. You don't go in there when they're having a bad day and start yelling and screaming commands. You probably sit down, rub their back. What's going on? How are you feeling? Well, is there a different way to look at that? What can we do to help you feel better? Be that kind of kind to yourself. You deserve it.
Yes, yes. And that's what I hear from women. They have that, mental block or something where we don't feel we deserve to be kind to ourselves. We don't feel we deserve this. And we've got to change that mindset, because I always think about the fact that we need to be our own best friend, because I look at, and I'm not perfect at doing this, but, you know, sometimes you talk to yourself and you think, and I think, you know, would I talk to a friend like that, or would I talk to anyone else like that? And it makes you think, oh, no, I wouldn't. I'd have more respect. So you need to have that respect for yourself and make yourself your own best friend so that you can, you know, be kinder and more forgiving to yourself.
Yeah. I love that. Be your own best friend. Absolutely. Because truly we are teaching the world how to treat us, right? So when we're critical of ourselves, when we speak poorly to ourselves, it shows in the way we carry ourselves. And other people pick up on that energy, like, oh, okay, well, that's okay with you. It's okay for me to treat you that way. No, we're going to be soft. We're going to be forgiving. And through that, I know a lot of times, and I work with a lot of clients who have this fear that if they are not hard on themselves, then they won't develop discipline. Then they won't have follow through. Then they won't become a better person. But it's just the opposite, because we really have sustainable growth through positive reinforcement. So the kinder you are to yourself, the gentler you are to yourself, you know, we're not saying we're not going to be adults. We're not going to make excuses. But when we do misstep, and we're going to forgive ourselves quickly, and we're going to challenge ourselves to our next level of greatness, but we're going to do that with love and kindness.
Yes, yes. And I pick up on that point because I actually used to be, I think it's the fact that you want to be pleasing, a people pleaser, or you feel. So I would always strive to do more than what was necessary, you know, and put that pressure on myself. And, oh, if I didn't achieve that at that level, which was probably way more than what normal people would, I'd be a failure. And so, you know, you have to learn to, as you say, you're not copping out, but you're just redefining what your expectations are. And sometimes we place those such high expectations on ourselves compared to other people. You know, we don't expect as much from others, but we expect so much from ourselves. And that can really bring you down because you're under pressure all the time. So how can you be happy in that situation, you know?
So, right. So managing our expectations, right? So funny, I just talked to someone about this today, right? So managing our expectations of ourselves, and then going back and doing self-awareness checks and saying, how do I feel right now? Not who, part of that people pleasing is, right, is because we want to be in control of how others view us, right? Mm-hmm. We want them to view us as, oh, this person is so. And asking yourself, is it okay if they don't view me that way? Well, do I view myself that way? If I do my best, but don't push myself beyond exhaustion, beyond what I can really do, if I save some energy for me, how would I feel? Right? Asking yourself that question and saying, would I be okay if these people don't have this certain viewpoint of me, but I know that I've done my best in this circumstance without overextending myself to the point where I'm harming myself?
Yes, it's all about becoming comfortable with who you are as a person. And, you know, there are a lot of people that say, well, I'm happy the way I am, and what other people think of me doesn't really matter. And I think that as you get older, you do take on that attitude. I mean, I'm a lot different. I'll be 66 in a couple of months. So I'm a lot different to what I was in my 20s and my 30s. And, you know, I'm not quite as hard on myself now. And I understand that it doesn't really matter what other people think. It's what is right for me and how I feel.
Well, I think you hit on a great point. You know, as we age, we realize a universal truth is people actually respond to the energy that comes off of us. So if we have this sort of put upon sort of I need to be last in order to feel good, we produce that energy. And even when we were giving our best, people sort of still expect more because, like, well, you can push yourself further. But when we show up and say, this is my full cup of presentation, this is all that I have to give, because I know that I have to reserve some for myself, whatever the sum is, your energy, your time, your money, I have to reserve some for myself, so that I can continue to grow and give in the future. I can't deplete myself in this moment and drag myself to the next event, you know, and I'm, you know, tongue hanging out on the ground. I have to reserve some for me. And so that is self-love. And when we show up in that way, people respond differently because they're like, wow, here is a person who's great at what they do. They're a giver, but they also have self-love. They have respect for themselves. Therefore, I'm in a place where I feel like I want to respect them as well. So we want to be careful that the message that we're sending out to the universe.
Yes, yes. Because I always think that if you don't have that respect for yourself, how can you expect other people to respect you? Because, you know, you're not valuing yourself as a person. You know, you devalue yourself, you don't have respect. Well, you can't then turn around and expect other people to, you know, think differently. That's, as you say, what energy you're putting out, what message you're giving to others. So, look, I could talk to you for all day, but I do know you've got a plane to catch. But also, you know, we're coming to the end of our interview. But I just wanted, I do have one question that I ask all of my guests, which I'll get to in a moment. But I just wondered if there was, you know, what would you advise if someone is not feeling, you know, their happiness muscle is just, they don't have any happiness muscle. What's something they can do today to really start building up that muscle and strength?
If the quickest way to, I want to give you two things. My number one way is you keep writing on a piece of paper. It's important to write. We could go into a whole reason why, but if you lack ability to write it, maybe you can record it, but I love it if you could write it. And if you could write it with your non-dominant hand, so if you're right-handed, write it with your left hand. A list of everything you're grateful for until you start to feel that energy, that heavy energy start to lift off of you. You just keep writing. You dig deeper and no repeats. You keep writing. I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for the sunrise. I'm grateful for the grass. I'm grateful that I can feel the wind on my face. I'm grateful for these kids who are working on my last nerves, but aren't they lovely? You just keep writing and keep writing with that non-dominant hand, and you write until that weight starts to lift off of you. And number two is gentle service. When you can provide a gentle service for someone else or something else, it could be a volunteering somewhere. It could be, I don't know, picking up and, you know, debris in a local neighborhood near yours, or it could be just calling someone to tell them, you know, to listen to them talk for a little while. Anything, providing a gentle service reminds you that you have something to give. It could be just a smile, and it will start to lift that spirit of in you and start to move you to a place of happiness. And then connection. If you do not have a life coach, I highly recommend that, or someone that you can talk to that will allow you to express yourself in a open and friendly environment, clergy member, a friend, a close family member, but connection is important.
Well, there's some great points for us all to consider if we aren't feeling, you know, that our happiness muscle is as strong as what it should be. So before we go today, I will be putting all the links into the show notes and into the blog post and everywhere, and about your book, Freedom is Your Birthright. So everyone's going to have all your information there that they can follow up with you if they would like some help or advice. And definitely getting that little book, Freedom is Your Birthright, as a daily manual to start with, I think is a great idea. So before we go today, I'd just like to ask you a question, as I said, that I ask all of my guests, and that is, what does being a woman living well mean to you?
Oh, that's a great question. What does a woman living well mean to me? Well, I would think in a woman of a certain age living well, I would think it's to be in a place of self-awareness and self-acceptance. And be in that place where I am self-aware and I accept myself as I am, and I love myself 100% as I am.
Yeah, what a great place to be. That would be living well, wouldn't it? So, yeah, that's a great answer. So thank you very much, Drayvon, for joining me today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and you've really given us some good little tips to start with on helping to exercise our happiness muscle, and to even think about that as just as important as normal daily exercise for the rest of our body. So really, I picked up a few good tips for myself as well. So thanks very much for your time and for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for this awesome podcast that you're doing and the good work you're doing in the universe.
Well, thank you so much. Well, that was a great interview with Dr. Drayvon James about exercising our happiness muscle. And I know I picked up a few tips as well. Something so easy as writing three things that we're grateful for from yesterday, as well as three things we would be grateful for the future. So I hope you've enjoyed the episode and that you've found some information that will help you to live a happier lifestyle. And if you have, I'd love you to leave a comment or a like, and also share it with your friends who would definitely benefit from listening to Dr. Drayvon's advice. So that's it for this episode. Until I see you again, remember to live well, enjoy life, and most of all, be a woman living life your way. Bye for now.